Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, ahead of the autumn statement and with a general election looming, how policies need to change to reinvigorate the market. In this episode, we're focusing on the policies needed to revive the housing market, improve the supply of rented accommodation, and get Britain building again. Think of it as the Winkworth Property Manifesto. So, what new measures could boost home ownership, allowing younger people to climb onto the housing ladder while building more good quality homes in the locations where they're needed? Should we relax the landlord tax regime, which is making buy-to-let unattractive, so pushing up the cost of rents? And fresh thinking is required to breathe new life into high streets and the commercial property sector. Well, what form should it take? To try and answer these questions, I'm joined as usual by Dominic Agge, CEO of Winkworth, and by Adam Stackhouse, Managing Director, Developments and Commercial Investments. Dominic and Adam, thanks for joining us. Right, first to you, Dominic. I want you to give us an overview of the residential property market now. What's going wrong and badly needs fixing, and what's going right?
Yeah, so good question. I think there's some overarching macro elements going on, which clearly the interest rates, which is affecting the market. But so within that, the sort of structural part of the property market, there are a few acute problems. And sadly, I think those problems get more acute as years go by. And you know, clearly we've seen a lack of house building. No one's really fulfilled their commitments to building the homes they said they would build, perhaps in the Tory case a bit due to infighting. And we've seen some acute problems in the rental sector, really. And that perhaps is the most pressing of them all. On the tick side, I suppose one of the things we're seeing in this environment is the benefits of the reforms, the mortgage market reforms of 2014, and the fact that the market has changed. You know, we're not in mortgages on interest only. You know, people were stress tested to higher interest rates. There were more hurdles to jump through, and as a result, there is more of a fixed nature. The mortgage market is more fixed. So long, people are in 2 to 5 year fixes. They've got higher tolerances in relation to increased interest rates. And so it is more protected from recent interest rate rises.
So against this kind of complex background, what should the Bank of England do now? Leave the base rate where it is, or do you think that further rises are needed to quash inflation?
So from a property point of view, you know, interest rates are hugely important. Interest rates and employment are the sort of big factors that support property market. I think we found our sensitivity, point of sensitivity over the last year, and we've seen it go through that at certain moments. I mean, I suppose in the Liz Truss budget, you know, we see it go beyond people's levels of tolerance. And then in sort of June, July, we saw inflation numbers surprising to the upside, and there, you know, rates moving beyond tolerance. I think what we see is mortgages at 4 to 5%. People continue to trade and are happy to accept those as a more normal long-term average. When they push sort of 6%, then I think you see people pause. So that informs us. And looking at that clearly, you know, we want to see the end of interest rate rises.
Now, we've been reading that mortgage rates are starting to fall, with Nationwide and others cutting some of the cost of their deals. How rapid do you think this process is going to be?
So it's So it's kind of mirroring, as I said, the sort of mini budget, really, where these things, you know, they sort of spike, mortgage projects are withdrawn, they sort of overcorrect and sort of shoot upwards. And then it takes them 2 to 3 months to sort of drift down to perhaps a more, more sustainable level and more in line with actually the trajectory of the economy and the kind of the overriding news flow. So what we've seen lately is actually mortgages, after recent spikes from sort of June, July, come down. You can now get a 75% loan to value at sub 5%. Many are predicting that this will kind of continue to decline with into October, seeing rates sort of between that 4 and 5%. Really, really, though, it's important to say that's on sort of five-year fixed term rates, where, you know, people are, banks are funding those loans on long-term projections of where interest rates will go. And so now the perception is that they've peaked, you know, we're seeing those rates come down.
We've got the party conferences kicking off just at the moment. What do you want to hear from the government at their conference in Manchester? Do we need some special measures to breathe new life into the market? Do we need a stamp duty tax break? What would encourage people to get moving again and start climbing onto the ladder? And let's face it, also downsize to free up some big family houses.
Yeah, so I think there's a cyclical nature to the property market. And I think, you know, there's no point, sadly, fighting that. I think short-term measures that stamp duty holidays and the like are short-term measures, and, you know, they distort things and have unintended consequences. I think there are, as I sort of said, structural problems that need to be addressed, and actually they need to be addressed, you know, quickly. You know, the one that's sort of most in the news is perhaps that, you know, the private rental sector, and you're looking at, you know, big problems, really. We talk about cost of living crises, but the rents are going up rapidly, 15% in London last year. People are now projecting 10% next year. And really that's driven by supply. It's driven by supply and lack of availability. And there's a lack of supply because of the measures and the perception around the marketplace and the kind of perception around the landlord. And really, you know, for years it was a very stable market and rent didn't really go anywhere, and there was a stable environment and messaging, and obviously that's changed to a sort of direction of travel towards, you know, increased intervention on behalf of the government in the sector, and really and tax changes that have sort of damaged the landlord's confidence, and so a reduction of them leads to a shortage of supply and a rapidly increasing rental prices.
So do you think that the government should look at the landlord tax regime again and realise that by penalising landlords, they're also hitting tenants really hard?
Yeah, so I think on your first question, you were saying what, you know, is good and bad. And actually on the tick column, one of the things was, you know, perhaps the extra 3% for a landlord when they're competing with an owner-occupier for a flat. I don't see there's any, you know, particular harm in that. We want people to be able to own their own homes, and that's fantastic. The damage, I think, has been done by the removal of the relief on the mortgage interest, which has effectively meant that, you know, in particularly acutely in London, people, landlords owned buy-to-let properties, not really for the income. They hopefully washed their face, but they were long-term play for capital growth. And those measures to remove the relief on interest have meant that those investments are underwater. Now, the direction of travel, say, is to move to larger build-to-rent properties, which are institutionally owned. However, they are not online in sufficient numbers to meet the demand that is currently in the market.
So what you're arguing is that a healthy private rented sector is crucial to the economy, and politicians need to get that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's crucial to cities, particularly, I think, you know, it's the vibrancy of a city, the individual nature of where you can live and the neighbourhoods you can choose to live as a young professional. So I think that's important. But I mean, it's clearly not all that's an acute problem currently. I mean, there are other areas, you know, that do need to be addressed by this government. And I think, you know, the infighting has caused, you know, housing targets to disappear, really. You know, manifesto pledges of 300,000 homes a year, national planning frameworks, you know, all these have been watered down. And so we're not building the houses we need to do, which fundamentally is the solution for the property market. And without that, it's only ever short-term measures to alleviate bottlenecks in terms of demand or helping people onto the property market. So there's a lot of work. It needs to go into that. And as part of it, and I'm sure Adam, we'll expand more, but, as part of that, there's a big problems around local authorities and around planning. You know, these local authorities have been hollowed out through lack of investment, and therefore, you know, planning officers are perhaps regional now, they're not local. The legislation's got more complex, so planning is longer, and one expert needs to meet another expert on a new piece of legislation. All this means delays to new house building. So there's a lot of work to be done to simplify that, to allow more access for local builders to build more locally suited properties, as well as schemes to come online quicker.
So the government has got a long list of stuff it needs to address. Do they need to move fast, in your view?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, as I said, sort of, particularly in rents, I mean, rents going up at that rate is you know, we're hearing stories of people now moving to, you know, smaller properties to squeeze in and sort of sacrifice the extra room. And that's, you know, that's people's lives, really. So we don't want, you know, want people to have freedom to live where they need to live for their work in a convenient manner in a place that's suitable for them. And you know, waiting for, as I say, build to rent to perhaps come online in the numbers that needs to is a painful gap, really. And so the quicker the action, whether that's a, I said no short-term measures, but whether there's an interim measure where you reverse some of the tax measures on mortgage interest relief to, you know, if the government wants to buy time for schemes to come online, then that would be sensible.
So delay is damaging the economy. Listen to that, politicians, as you take those trains north to Manchester for your party conference this weekend. Now to you, Adam, we've had Dominic tell us what needs to happen in the residential property market. But what about our high streets? What can be done to breathe new life into them and bring about that thing that we used to call levelling up, a word we don't hear that much now?
Well, thank you, Anne. I think one thing we need to acknowledge straight away is that retail isn't dead, but it has moved on significantly. And a subset of that particular headline problem for the UK is that it is indeed the poorest towns that have been the hardest hit. And it's the lower disposable incomes that these residents have that have forced these high streets into a relatively dangerous situation. Now, we look at historical trends in some of these cities where they've built out-of-town shopping centres and they've taken footfall away from the centre itself. So although we've had some success in regenerating industrial sites two or three decades ago, we're now facing a problem whereby the high streets themselves are pretty much deserted in terms of exciting and desirable retail destinations.
So it's something that the government needs to grasp. Do we think that changes to the planning regime, which most people wouldn't agree is fit for purpose, are needed?
Well, I think we acknowledge that there's this fundamental decline in retail across the city centres of the UK to varying degrees, and we can pretty fairly and squarely point the finger at e-commerce for part of that. But we've also got to be up front and look at the councils and the communities and see what they're trying to do to sort this out. Now, central government have set up a number of schemes over the last 5 years. We've looked at town deals where they contributed, I think, £335 million worth of allocation. The subset of that is that about 85% of the cities that are receiving these monies are in conservative constituencies, which is a point of concern. But over and above that, we've got the Future High Street Fund, which is another £700 million that was allocated in 2018. And when you read up on these policies, they seem clean, they look well organised, they're beautifully worded. But when you actually visit the cities that are under review, very little is starting to happen. So what we're really trying to do is look at ways to bring in activity to these city centres that isn't just focused on that kind of immediate fix of a few more restaurants, bars, nightclubs. They're going to put stress on local facilities, police, hospitals, etc. We're looking at things where they are acknowledging the needs of the local community. We want to try and force more residential into the town centres. And we've got to look at the needs of those residents and deliver the things that they want. Now, you know, turnaround times for medical treatment are serious topics at the moment, and therefore we need additional, perhaps small medical centres that can service this demand. We're looking for green open spaces, we're looking for workshops, we're looking for colleges, and of course we want a mixture of housing tenures in the central business district so that we've got retired people with increased disposable income who may walk up and down during the working day and distribute their funds.
So what we need is no more delay on implementing these rather good proposals for how we could reinvigorate our high streets. Does the government's relaxation of its green targets affect this in any way? Will it further slow those developments, or could it actually speed them up as the government wants?
My honest view is sadly not, Anne. The extended deadline that Mr. Sunak introduced this week for insulation and shifts from gas boilers to more efficient systems is really unlikely to have any major impact on developers. In fact, I think many house builders are quite frustrated just talking to them discreetly this week. They have dedicated teams, real experts in their field who are at the forefront of energy saving initiatives. And these are full-time employees that are committed to previous government targets. Of course, now they change again. My personal view is that these house builders will continue to target the long-term net zero ambition for 2050. And we must acknowledge that they're at the forefront of some of these energy saving commitments. But the government does seem to be slightly confused. It's sending out a mixed message. I think the real good news potentially is that buyers are deliberately targeting energy efficient or carbon neutral properties. So possibly there's an angle there. Perhaps the government could subsidise mortgage rates for buyers who are investing in properties with a lower carbon footprint.
Now, you're on the ground, so you're best able to tell us where there is a couple of examples, or just one, of where councils and investors have come together to create projects that are the blueprint for what we should be doing, either in high streets or on other bits of the commercial property sector.
Yes, well, there are some good examples in the UK, so we mustn't ignore it. But we need to sort of underline the point that retail has moved on. So I think with anything that one is dealing with, you need to identify what exactly the problem may be. And I think one of the best examples in the UK would be Swansea, which itself has immense desirability by way of its coastline, but has suffered really from a complex and quite disorderly series of planning approvals over the last 40 or 50 years, heavy reliance on the industrial light manufacturing sector, a complete lack of high quality office space, which doesn't match the high grade of its university students who probably want to stay local when they look for work, and really a heavy trend for pushing all their leisure facilities out of the town centre. So those are the snapshot problems of a typical vibrant city like Swansea, and they've embraced it. They've gone to the government, they've secured funding, they've used experts in planning, and they've been very dynamic. They've spent nearly £250 million recently, both public sector led developments. One's called Swansea Central, and they've introduced an entertainment venue, a 3,500 seat arena to provide facilities. Conferences are now flocking towards Swansea. They appropriately have hotels super glued onto that arena, restaurants, and of course, dramatically, they've put some infill along their coastal path by introducing new homes, both for holidaymakers and for residents, so that they can enjoy the incredible amenity that Swansea has. So that's a great example, but there are only a handful of these in the UK at the moment.
There are rumours running about, as we record, that the Prime Minister may want to call a general election as early as next May. Adam, I'd just like to get your sense of Labour's policies on the commercial property sector. For example, the plan to scrap business rates.
Yes, I mean, it's difficult to comment between the respective political parties, but I think Labour have identified a decent and highly persuasive argument for the electorate with their approach to business rate reform. Business rate reforms are a contentious point because from the balance sheet of UK PLC, or perhaps as the IMF might look at us, they will say, well, your business rate revenue is a safe source of income. So we have to tread gently. I think they've been very smart within Labour policymakers, suggesting a process of revaluation for smaller businesses. And this can also be based on a regional grading where we go back again and say, you know, retail is broken, but it's not dead. And we introduce a system which is more regionalized so that we can look at giving businesses in less positive areas, more deprived areas, a greater chance of success. I think, you know, if Labour do get elected and they do step forward as they say they intend to support these smaller businesses, then moving on to tax online retailers, which is a key part of their business rate manifesto, is a very, very wise move.
I'd just like to get your thoughts on the housing targets. Those were abandoned. The idea was we should be building 300,000 new homes a year. Do you think those targets should be restored for the health of the economy?
The target is, I think, a low target in terms of what's needed. I think we need to look at it from a broader platform as well. We often talk about how many new homes are being built, but what type of new homes are these? Recent data suggests that the Conservative government currently at the helm only constructed 33,000 properties for the social housing sector, and apparently the waiting list is close to 1 million. So there is such an incredible shortfall in that particular sector. The electorate are broadly demanding increased social housing so that these communities can start to rebalance. And I think the reality is that a target of 300,000 plus has been neglected for far too long.
Right. Final question to you both. First to you, Dominic. Take a deep breath here. If you were Prime Minister, what would you do now for the housing market?
So I was thinking about this. I think there are three macro points to kind of look at. One is build more houses, obviously, solve your infighting and address planning and allow more homes to be built to get to that 300,000 target, hopefully as a minimum, to take the pressure off the property market. Second part is look at making it more efficient. Downsizing is something we need to encourage. There's lots of, as Adam says, you know, what sort of housing do we need? You know, we need a fluid housing market where that you move up through the ladder and then, you know, you downsize when you no longer need the extra 2-3 bedrooms for the children that have grown up and left. And so that would get the housing market to fit the population better. And I think there's questions in there of how one encourages that to happen. Is that stamp duty for those that wish to downsize? Incentives, creating tax incentives for them to do so at an earlier point in their life. And the third part really is the landlord-tenant balance. It's ebbed and flowed over decades. And one government takes one position for the landlord and one for the tenant. And really, the balance is the important part in it all. Without that, then it won't be a healthy sector and we'll have the problems that we have today. And a lot of what's changed in that sector is language, communication by politicians. It's become such an electoral subject. Electioneering is on it, you know, based on it. There's a lot of words that put people off. You know, it was created in 2000s and earlier. I mean, it was deemed as a place for your pension, you know, as a person where pensions weren't paying you money. If you invested in a buy-to-let property, you could have a healthy pension and own something, you know, bricks and mortars that would be stable. Now those people have had the tables turned on them somewhat by the current language. So those are the three parts. There are lots of little parts I would also look at. Things like holiday homes being exempt from council tax and not contributing to their local communities. But sort of trying to keep it broad without keeping it all here forever. Those are the three areas I'd focus on.
Plenty of food for thought there. Over to you, Adam.
Well, I think, as you can pick up, it's all about understanding the problem. And at the moment, there's a Mexican standoff between the government and house builders in the UK. They're sat on land. They are controlling the supply tap. And when the prices ease off, they slow down with construction. The government needs to step up and acknowledge this particular problem and do something. So I suppose a planning enforcement team is what's needed. A group of people that should be tasked both from the private and public sectors to be parachuted into local authority environments, have a 90-day turnaround time for understanding planning applications that seem to be sat on the shelf, and an ability to force house builders to step forward and do something with these valuable development plots that they currently own. The house builder doesn't have to be punished with this process. I think the government should deliver incentives, offer up a fair land value, and actually, in some cases, talking to principals and, you know, general director level operators within the house building sector, they're very anxious to get on and do things. They don't like just sitting on land. They like to build. So I think we can look at schemes where they accelerate construction. Our employment statistics remain relatively safe and intact. Potentially a lease-back scheme to the government if we're looking at shared ownership or social housing models. But most importantly, a degree of authority needs to be introduced now because it's gone on for long enough and we need to parachute in appropriate teams that can fix these problems.
Well, lots of sound suggestions there, I think. And that's about it for this episode of the Property Exchange podcast. Join us again next time when we'll be looking at another hot issue in the property market.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.